Here we talk about type D quiver representation varieties, double Gaussmanians, and symmetric varieties.
Great. Well, thanks very much for the invitation to speak and for organizing this conference. So I want to talk to you today about some recent work from about a year ago, as well as some work in progress on type D quiver representation varieties. And so my plan for the talk really is to sort of divide it into sort of two halves, because we'll have a break in the middle. The first sort of just over a half will be mostly background, and then the recent work on type D will come after the break. So I apologize for people who, you know, completely know the background, and this is review. Oops. Let's see. There we go. Okay. So part one is background and motivation. And I want to just start off with something that probably everybody is familiar with, which are classical determinantal varieties. We can consider the affine space of matrices, just D0 by D1 matrices, and we can interpret this as just linear maps between base vector spaces, C to the D0 to C to the D1. I'll use row vector spaces, so that's why I have D0 by D1 matrices. I'll let X be a generic matrix of variables of the same size. And then we have a natural right action of the product of general linear groups on this matrix space given by conjugation. So on one hand, we're doing arbitrary row operations on one side and arbitrary column operations on the other side. And what are the orbits then? Well, because I can do arbitrary row operations on one side and arbitrary column operations on the other side, I can turn any matrix into a matrix with ones down the diagonal and zeros everywhere else. So orbits are determined by matrix rank. Okay, and so this is familiar maybe from your linear algebra class. And so of course then orbit closures are determinantal varieties, the classical determinantal varieties that are defined by prime ideals, namely take one size larger minors of this generic matrix X. And we know lots and lots about determinantal varieties, right? They're normal in Cohn-Macaulay with rational singularities. They have nice Grobner bases. Orbit closure containment, if we're thinking about the complete collection of determinantal varieties, is easily understood, right? It's just the stratification by rank. Their multigraded Hilbert series are understood. If we worked in positive characteristic instead, they're all Frobenius split, et cetera. Okay, so we know lots about determinantal varieties. And so I'm using this as my starting point. And we are going to generalize that by working with orbit closures of quiver representations. Okay, so even though I'm sure that everybody is familiar with these definitions, just in case, maybe let me review them. So a quiver is a finite directed graph. In this talk, I'm going to be mostly interested in quivers that are of Dinkin type. So here I have an A2, A3, and D4 quiver at the top of the screen. A representation of Q is an assignment of a vector space to each vertex and a linear map to each arrow. So here are three representations of the three quivers that I have above. And I'm interested in this talk of with particular spaces of representations of a given quiver. And those spaces of representations are collections of matrices that occur once I fix a based vector space at each vertex. So a dimension vector, this d, d0 through dn for the quiver q, assigns this based vector space, c to the di, to the vertex q. Okay, so di determines the dimension at each vertex. And so, for example, above, in the A2 quiver, my dimension vector would be 2, 3, then 1, 2, 3, or sorry, 1, 2, 1, and so on. Okay. A representation space, rep QD, is going to be the space of all representations of Q with a fixed dimension vector. So this is, you know, this boring affine space. It's just collections of matrices, right? One matrix for each arrow. And I allow my matrices to vary, but I have to fix the size of the matrix. So I'm not considering all possible representations for my quiver, just the ones with a fixed dimension vector, okay? And then once I fix this dimension vector, I have an action by a product of general linear groups, just like I did in the case on the very first slide for determinantal varieties, there I had this A2 quiver, right? And I had general linear group acting on each side. Now I have a larger quiver, and I have this base change group that acts by change of basis or conjugation on my representation space. And I'll call a quiver locus one of an orbit closure for this action. Okay, so here's my baby example, linking back to the first slide. Here's a little A2 quiver. I'll consider the dimension vector 2, 3. So I have C squared, say, at the first vertex, and C cubed at the second vertex. Then the representation space, well, that's just the collection of all 2x3 matrices, because they determine the linear maps from C2 to C3. Orbits we know are parameterized by rank, right? I'm acting on one side by GL2, the other side by GL3. So I can do arbitrary row and column operations, and I have three orbits here, okay? And the quiver loci are the determinantal varieties. So this is really familiar, probably, but I'm just changing the language that I'm using now. Instead of thinking determinantal varieties, I'm going to call them quiver loci. All right. So I'm primarily in this talk interested in the Dinkin case. And so for Q-connected, Gabriel's theorem tells us that rep QD has finitely many orbits for LD if and only if Q is of Dinkin type AD or E, okay? So if we're in the finite orbit case, we're in the Dinkin case. And in this case, a theorem of Bongaert says that, set theoretically at least, orbit closures are determined by minors of some somewhat complicated block form matrices, okay? So they're determined by minors of matrices. Again, they're generalizations of the very first slide, the determinantal case. So here's maybe a first generalization of the first slide, which would be equi-oriented type A4. And here orbits are known to be determined by the ranks of these matrices. So certainly the ranks of each of the individual matrices are invariant under the action of the base change group by this conjugation action, right? Doing row and column operations isn't going to change the ranks. Similarly, for the compositions of any matrices that I can take compositions of. Okay, and remember, I'm using row vector spaces, so that's why my compositions appear in that order. Okay, and then it's not that hard to check that this is the complete list of ranks that characterize the orbits. Okay, here's a non-Dinkin example. Here's the Jordan quiver. Here, of course, we have infinitely many orbits. The orbits are characterized by the Jordan canonical forms. Okay, so we're not in this setting in this talk. Okay. Okay, so that's sort of some very basic background definition. So why might you want to look at these objects? So my motivation comes from sort of commutative algebra and algebraic geometry. Certainly there are many other reasons to look at this, but from a commutative algebraic perspective, we've sort of already seen a reason why you might want to look at Dinkin quiver loci. And that's because up to radical, at least, Dinkin quiver loci are generalized determinantal varieties, right? They're determined by rank conditions on collections of block matrices. And they include examples of many classically studied varieties. For example, the determinantal varieties, the Buxbaum-Eisenbud varieties of complexes are a special case of the equi-oriented type A quiver loci. And so understanding just commutative algebraic properties of these objects are quite natural. A second motivation, which is really the primary motivation in some sense for this talk, and for the work that is done in the second half of this talk, is in the study of degeneracy loci of vector bundles. And I'll say more about that on the next slide. But that's really the direction that I'm coming at this at. There are, of course, other motivations for studying representations of quivers, or from this geometric perspective, these quiver loci. For example, there's well-known connection to representation theory of algebras. That won't appear in this talk, but maybe let me just briefly say that the category of representations of quivers is equivalent to the category of modules over the path algebra of the quiver. And there are connections between the geometry of quiver loci to the representation theory of the quiver. So for example, degeneration order, which is one thing that will show up in this talk, is orbit closure containment order. So on the first slide, when we were working with that A2 quiver, the degeneration order was just the order that was obtained by rank of the matrices, right? The orbit closures were stratified by rank. More generally, it gets more complicated, but Bongerts tells us that this can be computed in terms of dimensions of Hom spaces, of representations of the quiver. So this is one characterization of that. So there are lots of motivations for studying these. These are just two of them. So what about that motivation that I'm particularly interested, which is degeneracy loci and quiver polynomials? So what is a degeneracy locus? So let's let Y be some smooth algebraic variety. And I'm going to consider vector bundles of ranks M and N over my algebraic variety in a morphism of bundles. Okay. And I'll let R be a number less than or equal to the min of M and N. A degeneracy locus is the locus where the rank of this map is less than or equal to R. So YR is the set of Y in my variety Y, such the rank of phi Y is less than R. And locally, this is defined by the vanishing of minors of a matrix. So it's locally determinantal. Okay. And so it's sort of a classical result that if phi is general enough, if it's a general enough map, then the cohomology class of this degeneracy locus is expressible by the Giambelli-Tom-Porteus formula. Okay, so in terms of a symmetric function, a sure function. And in the early, I guess, late 90s or early 2000s, Buch and Fulton initiated a program that sort of generalized this. They found an analogous formula when we're considering sequences of vector bundle maps. Okay, so not just a single map of bundles, right, which locally looks determinantal. Instead, now we're looking at this sort of vector bundles that fit into this equi-oriented AN quiver sitting over an algebraic variety. And then a few years later, Knutson, Miller, and Shimizono produced more formulas in this Buch-Fulton setting by computing algebraic multi-degrees, or in other language, equivariant cohomology classes of equi-oriented type A quivers, okay? And these are called quiver polynomials, okay? And in fact, there are other interpretations of quiver polynomials that might be of interest to representation theorists as well. And if you read some surveys on these objects, you'll see other connections as well beyond this degeneracy locus motivation. Okay, so after this occurred, more formulas were subsequently produced in both cohomology and K-theory in this setting and related settings, and I listed some people that have worked on this below. Okay, all right, so before I get to the main part of the talk, so that was background and motivation, before I get to the main part of the talk, which is the recent work on type D, I want to outline a little bit about the type A story and what goes on there. Just for some context, remember the primary goal, or at least my primary goal here in this talk, is coming from this commutative algebraic or algebra geometric perspective, and I'm interested in singularities and commutative algebraic properties like Grobner bases, things like that, and these formulas for quiver polynomials, and so it's very helpful to understand the relationship between these type A quivers and other classes of well-known varieties. And in this case, it turns out that there's a very close connection between type A quivers and Schubert varieties. And this sort of was uncovered since, I guess, at least the 1980s. So just so that we all, again, probably review for many people, but so that we're on the same page, what is a Schubert variety? Well, I'm just going to work with type A here, type A Schubert varieties. So G will be a general linear group. B is going to be a Borel subgroup of upper triangular matrices, B minus lower triangular matrices. We'll work in the flag variety, G backslash B minus. Okay, so this is just convention. I'm setting these conventions, maybe they're not the ones you prefer, but I'm setting them just because they make the relationships work out as they're written on the slides, okay? A Schubert cell then is a B plus orbit in G mod B minus, and a Schubert variety is going to be one of the closures, and they're indexed by permutations, okay? And then The particular varieties inside of the flag variety that I'm going to be working with are not actually Schubert varieties on the nose. They're very, very closely related varieties. They're up to some affine space factor, going to be isomorphic to open sub-varieties of Schubert varieties. In particular, they're going to be these Kajdan-Lustig varieties that were have been studied by Alex Wu and Alex Yong. And they allow us to study local properties of Schubert varieties, like singularities in neighborhoods of torus fixed points, local cohomology classes, things like this, via computational algebra, basically. So what are these? The definition is not super important. I just want to give you a flavor of what they're about so that we can understand the connection to the quiver side. Okay, so a Kajdan-Lustig variety is a generalized determinantal variety. It's associated to two permutations in the symmetric group. The first one determines essentially an opposite Schubert cell, really a matrix representative, matrix form of an opposite Schubert cell. So it determines a matrix of zeros, ones, and variables. And W determines the Schubert variety that we're going to be working with. So it'll determine a collection of minors of the matrix associated to V. And then each Kajdan-Lustig variety, appropriately defined, is essentially an open patch of a Schubert variety. Okay. So again, this is sort of a computational algebraic way of studying local properties of Schubert varieties. So so for example, here's V is 4, 3, 2, 1. And I fill in a matrix of zeros, ones, and variables. The ones, the 4, 3, 2, 1 can be seen from the locations of the ones, right? If you were to just make a permutation matrix associated to 4, 3, 2, 1s, you'd get a matrix of zeros and where the ones are, and the variables appear essentially northwest of that, so that this is isomorphic. If I let the variables take on arbitrary values in C, I'd get something isomorphic to the opposite Schubert cell associated to 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, so my permutation here is in one line notation. W1423 is another permutation. It's going to determine sort of northwest rank conditions that I take on the matrix associated to V. Maybe I don't need to explain exactly how that works, but maybe I'll just briefly say that, I don't see how to do that. Okay, sorry, I was going to annotate the slide, but maybe I'll just briefly say that the numbers correspond to the northwest ranks of submatrices of W. So because the northwest 1 by 1 submatrix of W, that is the matrix that contains row 1, column 1, has rank 1, I put a 1 in spot 1, 1 of the rank matrix of W. Because the submatrix of W consisting of just row 1, row 2, column 1, column 2, so that little northwest 2 by 2 has rank 1, I put a 1 in the northwest matrix, rank matrix of W in spot 2, 2, and so on. And then I just take corresponding minors of this matrix from V. So this is just a generalized determinantal ideal. The key idea here is not the definition or any of these details. The key idea is that if I'm interested in relating these Kajdan-Lustig varieties are determined by sort of taking northwest justified minors of certain matrices with ones, zeros, and variables. Okay. All right. So what is the connection to Schubert to quiver loci here, which is really what I'm interested in? Well, let's just do it in this example. Here's this equi-oriented type A quiver. Orbits are determined by, as we saw before, or as I stated before, orbits are determined by ranks of certain matrices. So V1, V2, V3, V1, V2, V2, V3, and V1, V2, V3. And then Zelovinsky tells us that there's a map that allows us to go from representations in my representation space to essentially these Kajdan-Lustig varieties in a flag variety. Okay, so here the map is given as is written in the middle of the slide. And what you can sort of see is that the rank of V1 is the same as the rank of the northwest submatrix of the image, consisting of sort of block row 1 and block columns 1, 2, and 3. The rank of V2 can also be seen as a northwest rank in the image, the rank of V3 as a northwest rank in the image. The rank of V1 times V2 is not the same, but knowing that rank is equivalent to knowing the rank of the northwest justified block submatrix consisting of the top two block rows and the left three block columns. Okay, so the matrix that has that where the first row is 0, 0, V1, 0, V2 identity. Okay, and you just do some row and column operations and you see that it's equivalent. So basically, what this allows us to say is that equi-oriented type A quiver loci are isomorphic to open sub-varieties of Schubert varieties in a Gmod P or isomorphic up to some smooth factor to an open sub-variety of a Schubert variety in Gmod B. As I said, this map is due to Zelovinsky on varieties of complexes. It was done also by this result is known from Musalisa Chaudhry and Laxmi Bai and Magyar more recently in I think 98 showed that this was really a scheme theoretic identification, not just a set theoretic identification. So you really have this isomorphism between type A quiver equi-oriented type A quiver loci and these Kajstan-Lustig varieties in type A flag varieties. So consequences is that sort of immediately you get things like prime defining ideals, you get singularity results because we know them on Schubert varieties, we get Frobenius splitting results in characteristic P, we get that orbit closure containment or degeneration order for type A, equi-oriented type A quivers is completely determined by Bruha order on the symmetric group, okay? And so you get quite a lot via this connection to Schubert varieties. And in general, it turns out that combinatorial and algebra-geometric aspects of arbitrary type A quiver loci are governed by corresponding aspects of Schubert varieties in type A flag varieties, okay? So maybe that's what I'll say about that. But as I said earlier, a primary motivation here is not just sort of understanding singularities and defining ideals and these sorts of things, which we do get from the connection to Schubert varieties. It's getting these degeneracy locus formulas, right? It's getting formulas for these classes in cohomology of degeneracy loci of sequences of vector bundles, say. And the connection with Schubert varieties allows us to use Schubert calculus and all the combinatorics that comes from that to obtain these formulas. Okay, so that's sort of the key idea here. Okay, so maybe it's 12:26. Maybe let me take, if it's okay, 5 more minutes before taking a break and then I'll be at a natural stopping point, or is okay? Okay. All right, so... That's okay. All right. So maybe just before I stop, let me tell you a little bit about these formulas that I'm mentioning from a sort of a computational commutative algebraic perspective. So I'm going to start off with S is a positively graded Z to the D graded polynomial ring over, say, C. M will be a finitely generated Z to the D graded module over my polynomial ring. And then a multigraded Hilbert series is, as probably you all know, is recording the dimensions of the module. And I get this formal series. Okay. And I can express this series in this positively Z to the D graded case as a fraction, where I have sort of this boring denominator that is always the same, and the Hilbert series is completely determined by the numerator. And the numerator is called the K polynomial, K for K theory, because of the connection to equivariant K classes. And the multi-degree is the sum of the lowest degree terms of this K polynomial when I substitute 1 minus T for every appearance of T. And this is connected to, in maybe more geometric language, the equivariant cohomology class. Okay. And so computing these, what Knudsen, Miller, and Shimizono do in their paper is they compute these objects, these K polynomials and multi-degrees of quiver loci, of equiorient and type A quiver loci to get, and these can be interpreted as degeneracy locus formulas for vector bundles. All right, so let's just think about this in the determinantal variety case, that very first example, that A2 quiver. How does this work here? Well, we have a space of matrices, M by N matrices. We have the action of the general linear group. So I look at the maximal torus in each of the general linear groups, C cross to the M, cross C cross to the N. I act by conjugation. This is the induced action coming from the action by the product of general linear groups. I have this torus action now, so it induces a grading on the coordinate ring, on which is just a polynomial ring in this case. And if I'm interested in the K polynomial or multi-degree of the determinantal variety, it is given by, the K polynomial is given by a double Grothendieck polynomial, and the multi-degree is given by a double Schubert polynomial. Okay, so these are the objects from Schubert calculus that I said are showing up. And this indeed, this is generalized and has been generalized in many ways or multiple ways to general type A quivers. So for example, one that we'll see in at the very end of this talk, or related to something at the very end of this talk, is the K polynomial of a type A quiver locus is can be expressed as a ratio of specialized double Grothendieck polynomials. And this is a result in equiorient to type A of Knudsen, Miller, Shimizono, and in arbitrary type A to Ryan Kinzer, Alan Knudsen, and myself. But I won't say anything more about that. And there are other formulas, but maybe I'll skip this. The one thing I want to point out on this slide is that there are multiple formulas in terms of these objects that are representing cohomology and K-theory of Schubert varieties. And one formula is in the middle of the slide. You can express the K polynomial of a arbitrary type A quiver locus as an alternating sum of double Grothendieck polynomials. And a key idea here is to reduce to the bipartite or source sink orientation. That's sort of the orientation that's governing all the others. Okay. So why don't I stop there for the break, because it's, and then I'll pick up in 5 minutes. Okay. Great. So I guess the slide has been up for a few minutes, but as I said, just brief recap before we continue. We're interested in quiver loci of Dinkin quivers. In particular, I've talked a little bit about type A with a view towards these quiver polynomials. And when we do study type A, it is helpful, or one perspective that you could take is that it's very helpful to connect to Schubert varieties because these two objects are extremely closely related to one another. There are explicit maps and bundles and things that connect the two geometrically. Okay. So I'd like to discuss now some recent joint work with Ryan Kinzer on connecting type D quiver representation varieties to two other families of varieties that are going to play the role of the Schubert varieties. So for type D quivers, the double Grassmannian orbit closure, certain orbit closures in double Grassmannians, and certain orbit closures in certain symmetric varieties play the role of Schubert varieties. And it turns out they're sort of equivalent to work with any one of these families. So maybe let me just start with the theorem, what it says. So I'm going to be working with G, a general linear group of A plus B by A plus B invertible matrices, and K is going to be the subgroup GLA cross GLB embedded as two blocks along the diagonal of G. And then G mod K is an instance of a symmetric variety. It has finitely many orbits. And we can embed G mod K inside of a double Grassmannian, the Grassmannian of A planes in A plus B space cross Grassmannians of B planes in A plus B space. So N is A plus B here. Okay. And the reason why there's this natural embedding of G mod K into GRAN cross GRBN is that I can just think of G as, you know, I have this space of invertible matrices, and then I draw a line across my invertible matrices after A rows, so that I divide my matrix into A rows and then B rows. And when I mod out by K, I've modded out by doing arbitrary row operations in the top bunch of rows and arbitrary row operations in the bottom B rows. So I have Grassmannian over Grassmannian. Okay, so that's the embedding of G mod K into this double Grassmannian. And so what Ryan and I show is that there's this sort of explicit series of links that takes you from B orbit closures in G mod K for B a Borel inside G mod K to B into B orbit closures of double Grassmannians, which sort of link to B orbit GLD orbit closures in representation varieties for type D quiver representations. And then they sort of circle back. There's sort of this circle link, circle back to B orbit closures in G mod K again, but different B, different G, different K, just different sizes. And the point here is, it's not that there's explicit embeddings, which maybe these arrows indicate, but there are sort of explicit embeddings in bundles that allow for the connections between these varieties, which allow for the transfer of algebra, geometric, and combinatorial properties at the target to the source. So you have this circle where you can transfer properties from target to source. So there are a lot of properties that you can show very explicit from using explicit sort of geometric arguments that connect these orbit closures on these three families. So you get results on singularities. This recovers work of Babinski and Zvara. You get that type D degeneration order can be completely combinatorially described in terms of what's called the Clans poset. So in type A, it was the Bruha poset in the symmetric group. Now it's this what's called Clans poset, which are strings of, I'll explain this a little bit, but they're strings of numbers, pairs, and pluses and minuses. They're called charged involutions, and they index they give a combinatorial indexing of the orbits in G mod K. And there's the Bruha order there. That is, the orbit closure containment order has been completely described by Ben Weiser. There's a weak order there as well, in analogy with the weak order on the symmetric group that's also been described. But maybe what I'll say is, what don't you get from this sequence of series of links? Well, because the sort of the commutative algebraic side of the story is not as, well studied perhaps here, when we're thinking about double Grassmannians or G mod K, unlike in type A, we don't get prime defining ideals. So we don't really have the same kind of computational commutative algebraic tools that we had in type A. Nevertheless, we do have the geometry there. And so let me tell you a little bit how this works. The first two links that are in black here are fairly straightforward or come from things that are in the literature, essentially. Certainly the first link is very straightforward, right? We just embed G mod K into this double Grassmannian. It's really this last link that I have in red that's the content of this theorem. So let me just talk about this last link in red. Okay. So the main idea of this proof is a sequence of steps. And so let's just say we want to start off by understanding geometry and combinatorics of quiver loci or orbit closures in this quiver Q that I have at the top. And I'll put a dimension vector on it, but it has fixed dimension vector D, but I'm labeling the nodes by numbers, okay? That doesn't mean that's their dimension, that's just the name of the nodes. And if I'm interested in this quiver, I don't want to have to think about every single orientation of a type D quiver independently. So I go back to the sort of one key idea that was in type A, which is relate to the bipartite setting, and if we can do that, this governs geometry in all orientations. And so we do the same thing here. We say, okay, we're going to associate an almost type D quiver to an arbitrary quiver. And it's almost type D in that it has, you know, one extra one extra node at the end, right? And then I'm, so it would be type D if I deleted beta naught and X naught. And that quiver is going to be bipartite of this orientation. So sort of up to taking opposite quivers and working with opposite representations and inserting some arrows, I can always get from an arbitrary type D quiver to this almost type D quiver. And I can associate it, there's an associated dimension vector that I can associate to my almost type D quiver coming from my original quiver. And the so just to indicate what the notation here means, the blue nodes up here, they're the names of the original quivers, and I'm renaming the nodes of my new quiver, Q star, in terms with X's and Y's, but I'm telling you what node in the original quiver it corresponds to using a superscript in blue, okay? So you can sort of see that if I collapse all the red arrows, alpha one and beta one, and the nodes labeled three to one single node, I collapse that part of Q star to get the trivalent part of Q. And if I collapse the nodes X2 and Y2, which are both labeled with the superscripts four, to a single node, that now corresponds or looks like vertex four. Okay, so I can do this sort of collapsing operation. And the idea here is that I'm interested in this in geometric questions, and it turns out that when I do this collapsing operation, I can relate. I get a bundle, a homogeneous fiber bundle of essentially orbit closures upstairs in this quiver Q star to the original ones that I started with over the original ones that I started with inside of rep Q. Okay, so that's the idea. So I define this open subvariety XQ in rep Q star D star, where the red arrows are invertible. And then I can realize, this is what I just said, realize each quiver locus in rep Q sort of up to a smooth factor as an orbit closure, up to a product of general linear groups, basically one per red arrow, as an orbit closure in XQ. So I've now reduced studying all any orientation to this particular quiver here, which is not type D, okay? And then I do something that's sort of analogous to what Zelovinsky did in that map that I had a number of slides back, which is embed a representation into what'll be the analog of our opposite Schubert cell here. The analog of our opposite Schubert cell here is what I'll call a slice, and this slice is sort of nice in the sense of the way the opposite Schubert cell is nice, because if I intersect it with a B orbit closure inside of G mod K, it is isomorphic. Again, we prove a sort of a Kajdan-Lustig style lemma. It's isomorphic up to a smooth factor to an open subvariety of our orbit closure. Okay. And so this is my map. The second, the slice is this space of matrices that appears at the top, and the map, the analog of Zelovinsky's map, appears right below it. Okay, so we send a representation to this collection of matrices. And the key idea is we can identify each orbit closure inside of my space XQ, right? XQ was this, you know, open subvariety of the representation space of the funny Q star quiver with an open subvariety of an P orbit closure intersect the slice. And then we show that the latter is isomorphic up to a smooth factor to an open subvariety of O-bar. So basically, it's just a series of maps and bundles. And so we start off with our original quiver and the orbit closure we're interested in. We look above it to this quiver Q star. We embed representations of the quiver Q star into this slice. We show that sort of rank conditions that determine the orbits in the quiver Q star are in bijection with rank conditions that determine orbits inside of this slice in G mod K. And then we prove a Kajdan-Lustig style lemma that allows us to finally relate this to open subvariety of orbit closure in G mod K. So we get this sort of string of connections that allows us to translate singularity properties, because everything is, you know, nice and embeddings are smooth and things like this. It respects orbit closure containment. So we're allowing, we get, degeneration order in terms of this Clans poset, though we haven't actually worked out all the details there. I mean, it's true, but we don't, I can't tell you yet exactly what, how to define a clan from a, I have a recipe, but not a, anyway. And we also can, you know, pull back classes and say K-theory or cohomology, things like this. So this is really playing the role of the Schubert variety, these B-orbit closures and symmetric varieties are playing the role of the Schubert varieties in type A. All right, so I think I have approximately 5 minutes left. So that's just enough time for a very, very small example. And the reason why I want to bring up this very, very small example is because it lets me sort of explicitly touch on formulas for quiver polynomials in this case, which is work in progress. Okay, so here I'll work with this D4 quiver. I'll fix dimension vector at y0 and y0 prime to be 0. So really I'm working with an A2 quiver, a really boring A2 quiver, where the dimension vector over y1 and x1 are 1. Okay, so it's just a single vertex. It's either not 0 or it's 0. So there are two orbits here. There's an open orbit and a closed orbit. Then in this case, I can take Q star to be Q. And I can take the dimension vector D star to be D. So we can sort of skip this Q star step because I'm already bipartite. In this case, the slice in G mod K, the subvariety of G mod K, looks like this collection of invertible matrices inside of G. Okay. And then the representation variety and the closed orbit 0 inside of the representation variety embed into the slice using our map as either the idea given by the vanishing set of the ideal A minus B. And that just comes from if you look at what the map looks like, and A comma B respectively. Okay. The corresponding clans, which you can easily sort of work out if you know how to translate ranks to get clans, just like you know how to say you know the Schubert variety story. If I give you a Schubert variety or some rank conditions, you would know how to write down the permutation. It's and the analog here. Given some ranks, you can get the clans. And I said clans are strings of numbers and pluses and minuses with certain conditions. So I get these explicit corresponding clans. And I'm interested in computing quiver polynomials. Okay, so how do I do that? Well, I have a torus, which is just C cross cross C cross, which acts on rep by conjugation here. This induces a grading on the coordinate ring. Where the degree of my variable is t minus s, where I identify my grading group with free abelian groups on t and s respectively. Okay, and then we can compute this t minus s, which I mean we can read it off immediately here that this is the multi-degree say of the closed orbit. But the point is that we can do this more generally. We can compute this as a ratio of specialized, what I'll call Weiser-Yang polynomials. So Ben Weiser and Alex Yang studied obtained combinatorial polynomials that represent the equivariant cohomology of classes in G mod K. And so Weiser-Yang polynomials. So we can compute this multi-degree of the quiver locus as a ratio of specialized Weiser-Yang polynomials. The first Weiser-Yang polynomial corresponding to the first clan that I had on the previous slide is C1 minus D1 plus C2 minus D2. The second Weiser-Yang polynomial associated to the clan 1122 is as written. And then when I do an appropriate substitution of variables, I obtained the quiver polynomial that I was after. So actually writing down the proof, and so I'm not claiming this is a theorem. It works in this example and in other examples that we've tried, but I expect that it's gonna work. In general, it's a matter of following maps and tracing substitutions to get combinatorial quiver polynomials in type D. And so this is joint work in progress with Zach Hammaker and Ryan Kinzer. And so I'll stop there. Thanks for listening.
Thanks very much for the talk. So are there more questions? You can unmute yourself.
Thanks. So I have a question. So I'm new to this whole Hilbert polynomial story. But so in your last example, what would it actually tell you?
Yeah, so this quiver polynomial here, this the particular one that I'm writing down, this is giving me the essentially a representative for the equivariant cohomology class of the closed orbit in this case, which is just zero inside of the representation space. Or the language that I was using is this multi-degree that can be recovered from the Hilbert, the multigraded Hilbert series. And so there are different motivations for studying quiver polynomials. The one that I mentioned is coming from understanding degeneracy loci of vector bundles. So the idea would be to relate these quiver polynomials to formulas for the classes of degeneracy loci of vector bundles corresponding, say, to vector bundles in the configuration of a type D quiver. Yeah. But my understanding, even though I'm not an expert in this at all, is that there are also connections to structure constants for cohomological Hall algebras of Dinkin quivers as well. There's a paper of Rimani on this, but this is not my area, so I don't want to say more really than that. But if that is something that interests you, then maybe look at his papers.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so maybe like from knowing it explicitly in these examples and being able to compute it, you're actually able to compare things really in examples.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
Great, thanks.
So I have a question about the connection between type A and type D. Mm-hmm. So I often like to see the type D as some kind of folding, which is more type B usually, but really for quivers, I think it's type D. By okay. saying you take type A double size Dinkin diagram, and then you take the graph automorphism.
Okay.
And then in the middle, you want to have a fixed point for this graph automorphism.
Mm-hmm.
And then it induces an endomorphism of the representation space at this point and splits it into, say, plus and minus eigenspaces.
Okay.
And then when you take somehow the orbit space, this gives you the type D quiver by this folding, and in the middle you have these two eigenspaces. And I was wondering whether you can use results of type A and do some procedure like this, and then get formulas which you see now in type D.
That's a very interesting idea. I have never thought about it from that perspective. I've heard people say something similar to this before, but I guess I don't know at the moment if that could be helpful for the particular types of problems that we're studying. Yeah, okay. I don't know. It's interesting. It's an interesting thought.
I mean, many people connect folding with type B, which is very different than this folding, but I think there is a type D folding as well in this sense.
Do you know of a reference for this?
Yes, but it's a very old one from the 60s.
Okay.
Something. I can try to find it and send it to you.
Sure, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much.
So more questions?
Is it possible to say something about why this bipartite condition is so useful?
Yeah, so I guess the idea is that because you can do this collapsing from bipartite orientation to any orientation, it really, if you're interested in geometric questions, it kind of completely governs the geometry of every single orientation. So basically you're inserting arrows and vertices to go from an arbitrary orientation to the bipartite orientation in a very natural way, so that you have this homogeneous fiber bundle construction.
Okay, yes, sorry, thank you.
Yeah.
And then this also works in type A.
It works.
The key thing that you generalize.
That's right. Yeah, that was the first place that we used it. It was in type A, and then in type D, you can't quite go from every orientation to bipartite type D. You have to sort of have the flexibility, add your flexibility of working with this extra arrow, or you have to work with two quivers, one that's bipartite and one that's sort of almost bipartite, where one arrow is coming in and one's coming out.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, great. Thank you.
You can choose. Yeah.
I have a question stemming from my ignorance of this other side of the story. In five varieties, you've got Bott-Samuelson varieties, mm-hmm. which are nice combinatorial resolutions of singularities. Do you have similar things for these Kazan-Lustig varieties?
I would wonder if you could just use the Bott-Samuelson resolutions and sort of use the map, sort of the correspondence to get a similar resolution, but I've never thought about the details there, so I don't know. But that would be maybe what I would try.
I also wanted to ask, you mentioned weak order briefly in passing, but is there like a weak order on clans and a weak order
yes.
on, okay.
And yeah, exactly. And so actually that's how these Weiser-Young polynomials are defined. They're defined recursively, just as Schubert polynomials are defined recursively. They start with these beta double Schubert polynomials and give a definition for polynomials that represent the multi-degrees, and other things, for what are called matchless clans. So clans that just have pluses and minuses in them. And they represent, they parameterize the closed orbits in G mod K. And then they give a divided difference type recursion that gives the other ones.
Fun.
Yeah.
So is this poset appearing somewhere else? This clans poset?
Yeah. The only place, I mean, I guess the only places I know where it occurs, where they appear is in these settings, right? I think. I could be wrong about this, but my understanding is that they were really, it was developed to study this ordering in Gmod K.
Okay.
Yeah, the orbit closures in Gmod K. And so maybe elsewhere, but now type D quivers, I guess, as well.
Sorry, I had a quick question. First, thanks for the nice talk. Second, when you talked about the type A quivers and
yes.
the story behind them, you pointed out some specific features that the equi-oriented type A admits. Do you have any analogous result about any specific orientation of type D?
Of type D or type A?
Type D. Because for type A, you pointed out, for example, that the quiver loci are in scheme theoretic isomorphism with open subvarieties of the Schubert cells. Do you have any similar results for the symmetric varieties for orientation of type D?
So maybe I'll say is that actually, so in a paper of Ryan Kinzer and myself, we actually generalized this equi-oriented thing to all orientations. So this result is true in all orientations in type A. I just mentioned the equi-oriented case because that's sort of the more classical story.
Uh-huh.
But it's true in all orientations that there's this sort of affine space up to this sort of this nice smooth factor, every orbit closure in a type A quiver is regardless of orientation is isomorphic to up to this smooth factor to an open subvariety of a Schubert variety, and you can explicitly write down the Schubert variety, the permutation, and so on. And that's sort of what allows for, well, one thing that allowed us to get a nice formulas, quiver polynomial formulas in all orientations. In type D, I guess what I'm trying to, one thing I'm trying to illustrate here is that what should play the role of the Schubert variety here are these B orbit closures in G mod K, or equivalently B orbit closures in double Grassmannians, if you'd like, instead.
I see.
But yeah, the G mod K story seems to be quite nice. So that's what we were choosing.
Thank you.
Are there any more questions?
Well, I have a comment. First, thanks for the talk. And then maybe this would partially answer Ben's question, but I don't know about Bott-Samuelson resolutions for the Kazan-Lustig varieties, but if you take a B orbit closure in double Grassmannian, yes, there is a Bott-Samuelson resolution. And there was a paper of mine and then a paper of Piran and Achinger where it was generalized. I don't know if it helps.
Thanks. Can I just ask one more thing about the clans thing?
Yeah.
So in type A, like there, if I understood what you said, or maybe I didn't understand, I have no idea. The thing that corresponds to the normal Bruhat order on the Schubert variety is just something that's basically the Brouhaha order again.
Yeah.
And type A, but in type D, it's something else. It's this clan.
That's right. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a, if you want a completely combinatorial description of this, there's a paper of Ben Weiser on this.
Got it.
Yeah.
Is there anything resembling higher Brouhaha orders for clans?
I don't know.
This
yeah.
is, you know, my favorite yeah. pet topic that no one else likes, but
yeah, I don't know.
Orders are, but they actually seem to play some role in flag varieties in type A, and they don't exist in some other, in like type D in actual flag varieties. But
I see.
Maybe they exist in cover variety land where.
I mean, that's possible. Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know.
I saw a few blue hands, but I think they are all gone now. I think that's solved. Is there anybody left who wanted to ask a question? Who I missed? I think that's it. Then let's thank the speaker again.
Lovely talk.